are going to hear now from the Emirates President, Sir Tim Clark. Last week, of course, saw the decision by Emirates to cut flights on some routes into the US as demand dropped on the back of visa issues and the laptop ban. Now, that was followed on Thursday by a strongly worded statement from the three US legacy airlines, United, American and Delta, accusing Emirates of operating, and I quote, without regard to profitability and being, and I quote, propped up by billions of dollars in government cash. And these, of course, are accusations that Emirates has always denied. Now, I spoke to Sir Tim Clark about those claims, but we did begin talking in our interview about Emirates' decision to cut those US flights.
In February, I think we reported that we had seen an over 30% reduction in the rate of growth of our bookings, what we call booking velocity. That's not the bookings themselves, but the rate at which they grow. And of course, the computers began to flag that things were not looking too good. And we then went to work to see what was going on, to see whether this was the flash in the pan or whether it was going to get progressively worse. It wasn't helped with the laptop ban, and it wasn't helped with other initiatives that the US government took for its own reasons. And we saw the gap widening, a divergence of where demand should have been, where we forecasted to be, and where it actually was. So it looked as though in the cities that we served, we were facing load factors which weren't going to cut it as far as the profitability is concerned of those rotations. They are long-haul rotations. They cost a lot of money to put in place. And we clearly weren't going to get the kind of return we needed on two flights a day. So we've cut them back, and hopefully we can amalgamate the demand of the flight that we've cancelled on the remaining service.
Were those routes well performing before the end of the year, before these changes came in?
Yes. There was a degree of equilibrium. If we look back at last summer when we had two flights a day into Seattle, two flights a day into Boston, they were very, very strong. And this is the way we thought it would happen. When we looked at the build in our computer profiles of what happened in the spring of last year and then looked at what was happening this year, we could see that there was diminishing demand, and we knew exactly where that demand was: West Asia, the Middle East, North Africa, and other countries closer to home, Iran, for instance. So it was clear that on the basis of what we saw, that we would have to take the decisions that we did. The reason we're in this position is not of our own volition. It's because of a compendium of issues that have affected and clustered around geographically the segments that we're looking at. So there's no point putting your head in the sand about it. You just get on with the business, make the adjustments you have, deploy the capacity elsewhere where you can make better money, and hope that it comes good. My own view is I'm forever an optimist. I think we will get a resolution to all of this, that demand will be restored, and that sooner rather than later, we will put back the capacity that we've taken out on this temporary basis.
The three US legacy carriers, United, American and Delta, have issued a fairly strong statement through their lobbying organisation, the Partnership for Open and Fair Skies. They say that it's laughable that Emirates would call itself a profit-oriented airline.
Well, you know, they would say that. They've spent 2.5 years trying to take us down one way or the other. It is clear that they would rather see Emirates not on the planet at all. They use every trick in the book. When it is clear, and we have reported accurately to the US government that this company is not and never has been subsidized or supported financially by the stakeholder, the government of Dubai. And we've had to do everything on our own bat. But however hard we try, I mean, producing a 450-page rebuttal, as we did to the various organs of government in the previous administration in Washington, they keep on throwing out the same kind of things at us. And so we're kind of getting used to it. It comes at a time when it is clear that their businesses do not put the customer at the heart of their business. The product design they have is serving both the shareholders and perhaps the executives and the management and their bonuses rather than looking after and doing what the right thing by the customer. The incident that we all witnessed, which went viral globally not so long ago, is symptomatic of companies where the corporate culture is clearly misaligned with what they perhaps should be doing, which after all is carrying people from A to B in an affordable manner and treating people as they would be treated themselves. And if you can't do that, given that they have oligopoly powers, these cartels are enormously powerful. And they use bully boy tactics with regard to the presence of their brand, etc., etc., force people to do things that they otherwise would not like to do, but they have no choice. That needs to be sorted out. I'm not sure that they will sort itself out. I mean, had it been anybody in this organization, we would have resigned automatically when that kind of thing happened. But the important thing, it is symptomatic of a culture, the DNA, if you like, which starts at the top. And the top needs to get to grips with the fact that this has happened, it was allowed to happen, and the belief in the early days that this was not their fault is symptomatic of everything. So for them to start saying it's laughable that we are concerned about profit, etc., that we receive billions, actually they've got a far greater problem than we have. And frankly, we continue to rebut all this nonsense about receiving vast amounts of aid and billions. This is not going to go away. After all, this is a full-time organization employed by these carriers at considerable expense to their shareholders to have a full-time job to try and take the Gulf carriers down. And, well, frankly, when you look at the success of what they have been doing in the last 2.5 years, I think Emirates has doubled its presence in the United States, opened 5 more cities, and actually continued as if nothing had happened. So on the measure of how do you measure success, this has been an abject failure. It didn't cut the mustard with the previous administration. And my own view, I doubt it'll do this with the current administration.
Which actually is my next question. Do you not think that they will get a better audience with the Trump administration and its dedication to putting America first?
No, I think on the contrary, the Gulf carriers, and I can really only speak for Emirates, has demonstrated that it has been a powerful economic friend of the United States over the years since we started flying in 2004. After all, we have the largest order book for the 777 program in Boeing. We launched the 777X, the derivative of this excellent aeroplane, the largest launch order in history of civil aviation by value. And we are creating hundreds of thousands of jobs, both within the airframe manufacturer, Boeing, and with General Electric, who provide our engines. Now, if you take that together with the other two Gulf carriers, Qatar Airways and Etihad, it becomes an enormous opportunity for the production base of the United States. This is exactly what President Trump wants. Maybe he's concerned about, you know, some of these companies outsourcing to countries outside the United States, and that value needs to be brought back into the U.S. But does it change the fact that what we have done as airlines has been done on the back of American jobs, a continuation of American jobs, a continuation of wealth creation, not only in the manufacturing sector as far as aviation is concerned, but in all the people that we bring, the millions of people we have brought into the United States, whether it be the hospitality segments, the business segments, fly on Emirates because we provide a very affordable product connecting over this super connector hub we have in Dubai here, and we feed multiple points in West Asia, many of whom originate from those places. We are held in high regard by these market segments. So to be quite honest, the wealth creation that we have put into the United States, the wealth creation that the other carriers linked to us in terms of geography have done, is probably one of the biggest, most measurable effects of the aviation industry into the U.S. since the Second World War. So I don't think that President Trump's administration will go after that, because there will be many people not within the airline community that will say to him, these carriers have done us an enormous amount of economic good. And to reduce their operations, to eliminate them from the North American continent, I don't believe that would ever happen. That would be complete nonsense. But if they were listened to, if these people in the coalition group were listened to, and that's where they would go, I think that would be absolute folly, and really doesn't take much to understand that what they are saying is complete stuff and nonsense. As I said, they're an oligopoly power. They have antitrust immunity. They can charge what they like, offer whatever product they like, and treat passengers as they like. That's exactly what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. The Gulf carriers have introduced a measure of balance, a measure of choice, a measure of quality that had diminished and disappeared from the U.S. operations. And it's about time that somebody stood up and said, actually, these people are really good for the United States. That's where I believe that the current administration, the President Trump's administration, will value that, recognize that, and not tamper with it.
So, Tim, if we can have a look at one of the factors that has led into you cutting flights in the first place, which is the laptop ban. Mm-hmm. Rumors persist, and in fact, we spoke to one analyst this morning that firmly believes this, that it's not just security behind the ban on laptops in cabins. Do you think that in any way, any form of protectionism or the interests of American Airlines plays into this?
No, I've said quite publicly I don't believe that to be the case. I believe that the United States detected a clear and present threat and that they needed to deal with that in a fairly draconian manner, and that, of course, is what's happened. As we move on, as the nature of the threat is better understood, and particularly as the security apparatus in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, is rated very highly, not only by the Americans, but by the Europeans and the Australians, etc., I think they will perhaps be more relaxed about the ability of the security organizations to deal with the threat in a manner that is probably a little bit more incisive than what they were doing. After all, in the Emirates Group, we have an outstanding security organization which has received accolades from all over the world in the quality of its business, the quality of its detection capabilities, and its ability to interdict elements that we would not like on the airplane. You know, not just about the countries they're going to. We don't want them anywhere near the flights that we operate. So we've spent an awful lot of time and money putting the right people with the right skill sets and competencies into the top of that organization. We've spared no expense to arm them with the tools, whether it be detection equipment, training, etc., etc. And as a result, many people come to the Emirates Group Security and ask for their help, advice, and we offer training courses, we do all sorts of things. Now, we're hoping that we can persuade the United States that we can do the job for them without belittling or diminishing their concerns about the risk. We have a way, a means of doing it. And I hope that in the next few weeks we can persuade them that that's the case. In the end, it's their call.
So, Tim, if I can ask you very quickly about some of the redeployment that you're planning in the wake of these cuts. You've mentioned you are going to be redeploying some of these planes, the staff that won't be going as much to the US. Where is that capacity being redeployed?
Well, fortunately for us, we have some green shoots in some of the African markets, South America, Oceania, the Far East. So we're looking now to deploy that capacity. So it won't be idle. As more aircraft come in during the course of this year, if demand picks up again to the point that we've had to cut back, we will deploy those new assets over there. You know, it's a difficult trading environment globally today, and we're having to look at all of that and see where we can extract best value for the assets that we're employing.
Could this affect any of the aircraft you've got on order, any of your outstanding A380 orders?
No. We should have 95 of them at the moment. We've got a few on delivery. We have a delivery stream that takes us through to the middle of 19. Airbus, of course, are busy trying to sell us some more. But that line, as it stands today, we see no reason why that should get interdicted. And equally on the Boeing line.
Will there be an effect to the bottom line of Emirates for this year or into the next financial year, do you think?
The last quarter, given what has happened on the US, hasn't helped. It was a difficult year for us anyway, but hey-ho, you know, that's life. We've had many, many, many decades of profitability. We will remain profitable this year, perhaps not as much as we would have liked, but we kind of move on and deal with the situation as it is and hopefully retain or recapture our profitability to where it was, if it doesn't happen quite to the level where it probably will in a year's time or 2 years' time. But the business keeps going. The business keeps expanding in other areas. Our fleet continues to be adapted in terms of the increase and upgrading of our products in all three cabins. And we've got a lot of work to do and more to come. And that'll be evident towards the end of the year, where Emirates continues to roll out a whole slew of new products.
Is there an end in sight to the laptop, the electronics ban, or is this the new normal?
I would hope that there is an end. And why do they say that? Because the universal applicability of the ban hasn't happened. For instance, if you look at what we've all been subjected to on liquid and gels and shoes and all the other bits and pieces, those have been going on for years, and they're still with us today. But this hasn't actually happened. I thought that the laptop ban would apply to all carriers in the operating wherever they may be on the planet, but that hasn't happened. And many countries are satisfied that the security measures they have in place are fit for purpose and okay. So it could be that, getting circling back to what I was saying earlier, if we can persuade the United States government that we can do a very good job in preventing all these things happening, that we will get back to some normality and then restore the way things were, where people can carry their laptops in the aircraft cabins with them. I do see that happening. I'm being over-optimistic, but I'm sure we can find a way to make life easier for the passengers.
If we can just look bigger picture for a minute, I mean, we've also been reporting recently on the Business Breakfast about changes to the US and Australia in terms of work visas, the IMF reporting and warning about countries becoming a lot more insular. Do you think we're seeing a bit of a sea change in terms of protectionism and insularity? Is this worrying for aviation in general?
In answer to the first question, I think there is clearly a correction going on. Could that impede demand for air travel in the future? Maybe. But every cloud has a silver lining. I'm of the view that once this correction has taken place, for whatever the reason, I'm not going to comment on that, that the economy will once again power on globally, regionally, etc., and by country, and that there will be a degree of equilibrium restored. So we just have to wait and see. But I have to be an optimist with regard to where we map where Emirates is going to be in the future. We deal with this correction and the effects it's having and the unintended consequences of those corrections. But if governments around the world decide that they want to do it their way, America first, or cutting back on this and that, they'll have to make that assessment. Some of the H-1B visas that you mentioned coming out of India and places like that are driven by the need to select the very best intellectual capabilities from the great and the good in India. And they populate large sections of the United States in science and technology, etc. Now, the US will take a view as to how it wants to deal with that, and I'm not going to comment on that. Equally, the Europeans may be doing something, etc. But this is just a correction. And once we get it sorted out, then I think business will carry on as robustly as it has in the past. That's me, the optimist, speaking.
Well, speaking of corrections and optimism, I mean, Emirates had some difficult earnings last year. I know you've made some corrections in terms of headcount. Where is that positioning you in terms of numbers for this financial year?
We will reveal our results within a few weeks now, and I'm not going to gainsay my boss, Sheikh Ahmed bin Saad Al Maktoum. He will make that announcement. It's been a challenging year. We kind of never expected to make the kind of profitability that we did the previous year, given what has happened. And we said at the same time that 17 was going to be an equally challenging year. And every day there's something new that affects our markets. You know, we just had a general election announced in the United Kingdom. We've got geopolitical issues, socioeconomic, pure political issues going on at the same time. So it's anybody's guess is the way we're going to go. That will always affect demand. That will always affect our results. And demand is curtailed, diminished. Everybody then starts to chase that demand at lower prices. A great time for the consumers, I might add. I don't think they've had it so good. And we have to deal with this. But, you know, that's life. That's what we're paid to do. And we must get on with it and make the best of it for the time being, which we will.